Welcome to Breitbart News Daily. Thanks for being here. It was Thursday. It's still Thursday. I don't know when you're listening to this. But anyway, every Thursday we talk to Dr. Sebastian Gorka. And you can check that out if you subscribe to SiriusXM. We are going to present to you here our guest about the EV mandates. I hate the word EV. Electric vehicle mandates that Biden just imposed yesterday. So we'll do that in just a minute. But first, the rankings just came out about happiness, and we, for the first time, dropped out of the top 20 when it comes to happiness, whatever that even means. So help us, or let us define what happiness is and how we can find it and not despair. So they ask this question every year, the World Happiness Survey. And for the first time since they've done it since 2012, America is not in the top 20 of happiest countries. We are in 23rd place when it comes to happiness. Now, I don't know. I didn't look into the specifics of this survey, but Gallup does this as well. And they'll ask 1,000 people in 150 different countries. And the question is, I'll ask it to you here. If you imagine a ladder whose rungs are numbered 0 to 10, 0 represents your worst possible life and 10 represents your best, which rung would you be on? That's how Gallup asks it. 1,000 people in 150 different countries, that's what they ask. So go ahead, what rung of the ladder? So 0 is your worst possible life, 10 represents your best. What rung would you be on? That's how they figured out how to ask about one's happiness, which is really tricky because it's a subjective thing. This is one of the reasons why we had an opioid crisis in America, is because healthcare used to deal with objective measurements like your heart rate or your blood pressure, something objective, something you can measure. But then we introduced pain as a metric, and pain is subjective. You have two different people and you perform the same procedure on them, and someone's pain may be a 4 and someone's maybe a 10, whatever, right? And we use that as a metric. And then that was a metric for like the quality of a hospital. They would ask patients to review their pain management. And it screwed everything up because it's a subjective thing. But anyway, I don't want to get into that. The point is, happiness is subjective. And this is why the Nordic countries always do so well. This is why they always rank so high in happiness, because of expectation. So in Denmark and Sweden, I think Finland's number one, it's all the same. Their culture says that you should expect very little in life. You should expect life to be a 1. And then when your life is a 3, you're thrilled. Way better than I expected. In America, our culture says you should expect life to be an 11. And then when life's a 6, you're miserable. That's just how it goes. Objectively, America, we're a 6 on the happiness scale. But because we expect it to be a 10, we're miserable. And the Danes in Denmark, they're a 3 on the happiness scale. Well, we should be happier than them, but we're not, because they expect it to be a 1. You make sense? You with me? So that, like, it's about expectations. That's why the subjectivity of happiness, you know what to do with it. So one conclusion that one can make is that you should expect less in life. But that's not good. I don't want that. It's good. I want us to expect a 10. I don't want us to expect a 2. I want us to expect a 10. But the trick is, expect 10, but then be content with the 6, not miserable with the 6. And that's what Paul said in Ephesians 4. He said, I've learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low. I know how to abound. In any circumstance, I've learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. He's content no matter what. He may want to be a 10, but if you're only a 4 in the moment, you should still be content with that. I don't want to lower our expectations with what I'm getting at with this cultural analysis between us and the Scandinavian countries. I don't want to lower our expectations. I don't want to be like Denmark where we expect life to be a one and then are content with a three. I want us to want a 10. I want that edge. The edge is good. You know, you hear people in life, they'll say something like, I drink or I smoke this or I do the mushrooms or whatever because I want to take the edge off. You heard that line? I want to take the edge off. It's like, no, the edge is good. You want an edge. The edge is what makes you sharp. You don't want to take the edge off. The edge is good. Denmark, they don't have an edge. And that's why nothing impressive ever happens in Denmark. One reason we're so great is because we have an edge. We expect more and bigger and better. It should be that way. Keep that edge. And never despair. I love that Rush Limbaugh line. I've never heard that line before. Despair is not an American value. If I may, one of the biggest reasons, other than social media, but other countries have social media too. I would say the biggest reason why we are no longer as happy as we used to be is because we're no longer a Christian nation. One of the elements of Christianity is hope and joy. You throw away the Bible, you throw away a lot. You throw away the basket that we call the Bible. You throw away everything in the basket. Christians should be content and joyful. When you throw away the Bible from our culture, the people who did that, right? The people who threw away the Bible and got rid of the Ten Commandments in schools and stuff like that, they thought they were throwing away all the mean stuff. They thought they were throwing away the stuff like don't sin. But they were also throwing away stuff like be joyful. You with me? They didn't realize that they were doing that, or maybe they did. But most people didn't realize that that was also the case. There's a story of Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin was in France. By the way, did you see there's an Apple miniseries about Ben Franklin? I don't know if I can do it. The John Adams HBO one from years ago was so good. I just don't trust Hollywood or whoever made this to make a good Ben Franklin movie. And that's disappointing. And I don't know. If you end up watching it, let me know if it's any good. Because I love Ben. I live in a town named after Ben Franklin. Not because of that. That just happens to be the case. But so Ben Franklin was in France. What if I moved to Franklin, Tennessee, because I love Ben Franklin so much? It was actually named after Ben Franklin. So Ben Franklin's in France. And he's around all the sophisticated elites who look down on the Bible. Now, Ben Franklin, the secular founder, admired the Bible and the principles of it. We shared a couple weeks ago the letter he wrote to George Whitefield saying that his dream is to found a Christian colony in Ohio with him and George. So even as our secular founder, he knew that we were a Christian nation. He's the one who wanted the seal to be Exodus. So he heard about these people making fun of the Bible. He was there. He was around these people making fun of the Bible. So the next day he came back and he said, everyone, you're not going to believe it. I found the most beautiful ancient poem. It's stunning. And I'm so glad I found it. I can't stop thinking about it. And they said, oh, Ben, tell us about this poem. And he read this. He said, though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit beyond the vines, though the labor of the olive may fail and the fields yield no fruit, though the flock may be cut off from the fold and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. And the elites of France said, oh, beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Who wrote that? And where can I get a copy? And he said, Habakkuk 3 in the Bible. That section, so because it increases in severity, right? You go from figs, there's no figs on the tree, to fruits, to the fields having no sheep. It gets worse and worse. So it starts off as like an inconvenience or like a disappointment. to an inconvenience, to a massive life change, to possible starvation and dire straits. Like it gets worse and worse and worse and ends with, yet I will rejoice. Yet I will rejoice. That is a God-centered defiance in the face of a worldly circumstance. And it doesn't matter. Yet I will rejoice. That's a Christian value. That's a Christian value. And we threw that away, along with everything. We threw away hope and contentment and joy. You want to know why people are miserable? You want to know why we're no longer happy? Those were Christian ethics. 866-95-PAGE. You don't have to be a Christian, okay? You don't have to profess Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior to have lived in a country that had this as their culture. You still benefit. Listen, this is why whenever I talk about Christianity in the show, I'm not proselytizing. I'm taking it as like an anthropologist would. If an alien came down from outer space and looked at America at a previous time, they would analyze the cultural values that these people have, and they would be biblical values, biblical principles, whether you were a Christian or not, but we all had them. It was the founding of our country based off of these principles, and now they're gone. And now we're not joyful anymore as a people. Now we're not content. And now we're miserable. And now people are unhappy. Back to Breitbart News Daily. Jason Isaac was here, former Texas state rep, not only to speak against the electric vehicle mandate, but also he was the guy who was very instrumental in passing the bill in Texas to divest from BlackRock. So we'll talk about that right here. Mr. Isaac, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, good to talk to you. So I think let's talk about the EV mandate first that Biden just released yesterday. So there's the policy of it, and then there's the politics of it, which I find very fascinating. This seems like a really bad idea with Michigan being a state that votes in the election to do this now. I don't understand their calculus exactly on it. But it says here that electric cars were 7.6% of U.S. car sales last year. 7.6%. This new regulation would require electric cars to be 56%. And then another 16% have to be hybrids. So what's the deal with this regulation?
Yeah, this is the gift to the Chinese that just keeps on giving. You look at the components, the parts that are coming from China, they win in this, and Michigan loses, Ohio loses, Detroit loses. And I think this may be the bloodbath that one of the presidential candidates was talking about to the automotive industry. It's going to crush them. It's already crushing them. Ford's profits would have been doubled last year had it not been for the losses on EVs. You look at the Ford Lightning, which they lowered the price, the long one with the extended range battery that might actually get you some range. They lowered the price from $98,000 to $92,000. Woohoo, what a bargain. You know, who can afford that?
Hold on. The Ford Lightning truck that can't pull anything is $92,000?
The one with the extended range batteries that might get you a few hundred miles or 100 if you're pulling a trailer.
Yeah,
92. They lowered the price to that. So it's the shareholders that are picking up the cost of that. I mean, like I said, their profits would have been more like doubled had it not been for their losses on their EV electric vehicle unit. So it's really unfortunate. You think about all the teachers, the firefighters, the pensioners who have their pension funds invested in these companies because companies like BlackRock are forcing, you know, Ford and other companies they invest in to move on this energy transition, which is just separating you and I from our food, our money, our fuel, you know, all those things known as freedom. It's bad politics in the policy that the Biden administration is pushing is just going to continue to push the cost down, at least among us, and people won't be able to afford cars at all. And I think that's kind of what they want. They want us locked down in our homes like they had us locked down during COVID.
That's right. So I, this came out like a year ago, and they came out with the new regulation mandates. And they said they're implementing it slower. So instead of this having to be done by the end of the decade, they're now adding another, I don't know, whatever, 10 years to it. So does that make any difference to you at all?
No, it really doesn't, because you look at the investment that's coming into these automobile manufacturers, and they're going to read, okay, we have to do this. So they're going to push ahead, and they're going to want to be first. And when you look at the cost of these vehicles, again, Ford losing a lot of money. It's over $60,000 per electric vehicle. Then you and I, as taxpayers, as ratepayers, and purchasers of internal combustion engine vehicles, you and I are chipping in, based on research that I published late last year, about another $50,000 per electric vehicle. It costs over 10 years. That's what the citizen that doesn't own an electric vehicle is pitching in per electric vehicle sold. So like that Ford Lightning, its true cost over 10 years is really over $200,000.
Can you give us the calculus on that? How do you calculate that? How am I paying for other people's electric cars?
Yeah, so there's about $20,000 per electric vehicle sold in corporate average fuel economy credits. These are credits that are sold from companies like Tesla, nearly $2 billion in revenue in 2021, by selling these credits to other automobile manufacturers because they can't meet the requirements of the federal government to meet the corporate average fuel economy. So they just buy credits. They just trade credits. Well, electric vehicles get a multiplier. We wrote about this. I published a piece on this. And then really people started to pick up this multiplier that's buried in government code, that a Tesla gets 65 miles per gallon. That's the equivalent of what it gets. But it's an electric vehicle, so we'll multiply it times 6.67. Why? There's no reason. It's just an illegal multiplier, but they do. And so they get credit for almost 500 miles per gallon, and they sell those credits to other companies that make internal combustion vehicles. And then you and I are picking up costs, significant costs, on the electric grid, on the components that go into it. You think about one Tesla, and Teslas are great. They've got a lot of brand loyalty within their company. I just wish I wasn't paying for other people's Teslas. But you hook up one to a supercharger, and it's pulling the amount of electricity that powers a small grocery store. It's a ton of electricity it's pulling off the grid. You and I are paying for those upgraded components because utilities subsidize those costs to ratepayers. And then there's this the federal credits of nearly $10,000 when you add in the federal and the state vehicle credits that you and I are subsidizing as taxpayers.
Okay, so I'm a little slower than most with these credits. I want to make sure I fully understand how insane this is. So you're telling me a car company has to sell a certain amount of, let's just say, electric cars. And if they don't, they can buy credit from a Tesla that only makes electric cars. And so they have to spend money, and they give the money to Tesla. And then let's say Ford or whoever gets these credits, and now they have to raise the price of their gas-powered vehicles because they had to spend money on the credits?
Yeah, absolutely. It's essentially exactly what you're saying. They have to meet a certain fuel economy rating across everything they produce. It's one of the reasons why a lot of companies started producing these smaller, lighter weight cars and giving them away. I mean, they're basically selling them at a loss and making money on the larger SUVs that people actually wanted, because they had to meet this federally required miles per gallon equivalent across their entire everything they manufacture.
Wow, interesting.
And when they can't get there, they trade parts with Tesla for some of those credits. Then they give Tesla cash. So what we can tell, and the research that I published, it was nearly $2 billion of revenue to Tesla from selling the credits, but it could have been so much more for trading those for parts that we just can't see because it's not on the books anywhere.
Wow, $2 billion. So all the car companies gave something like $2 billion to Tesla for their credits.
And that just got pushed down to the cost of internal combustion engine vehicles. You want to go buy, you know, a vehicle that runs on gasoline or diesel, or you're going to transport goods, you're paying for the cost of other people's Teslas.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
It's one of the reasons a lot of companies have gone to electric vehicles. I mean, Dodge Ram just announced a couple of months ago they were going to make an electric truck. Even after Ford and GM slashed their projections, they've closed factories, they've idled factories because of the loss. The money's just not there. The demand is not there. Well, Dodge Ram says we're going to come out with this truck that'll go 700 miles. Well, it just happens to have a natural gas electric generation compressor, you know, built into the truck to charge the batteries. It's silly. It's basically a CNG, a compressed natural gas vehicle with a battery, with an electric motor. But no, it qualifies as being an electric vehicle, and so they get these extra credits by being a 100% electric vehicle. It's so absolutely absurd. This is the government manipulation of the market.
Yeah, which ends up being a scam, of course. Is that what you just described? Would that be called a hybrid car? Because now hybrid is part of these regulations as well. Is that okay?
Yeah, actually, the Dodge Ram is going to be classified as a 100% electric vehicle, even though it has, you know, you've seen the pictures of the Teslas with people that put a trailer hitch on it and they're hauling a generator and gasoline charging the car while they're driving down the road. You know, those are always the funny pictures I love to see. But no, this is a 100% electric vehicle. It just happens to have a natural gas generator built into the truck to charge the batteries, which, yeah, it's crazy, but it's classified as electric vehicle, and they get 6.67 this multiplier that multiplies their miles per gallon, and so they'll get a whole bunch of extra credits to spread that around their fleet while they're really doing no improvement whatsoever.
Yeah. Okay. You mentioned bloodbath, the Trump's bloodbath comments, and I'm super glad that the media took that and spun it around the way they did, because it actually brought a lot of attention to the actual issue here at play. When BYD or whatever Chinese car company starts producing in Mexico, what will that mean to our auto industry, and how?
Well, if they can meet our safety standards and then they start to import those vehicles, it's going to flood the market with cheap vehicles. I mean, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They don't care about the environment. They care less about slave labor. I mean, it's one of the reasons they're making all the batteries are coming from Chinese-made components, because they can churn them out with the 40,000 kids that are working in Chinese-owned and controlled mines in the Congo today. I mean, they're mining this cobalt for the electric vehicle forced energy transition. Obviously, and then the Biden administration is rejecting permits to have cobalt mines here in the United States where it would actually be produced responsibly. I mean, it's silly that we're forcing this transition on people for no environmental benefit whatsoever. I mean, zero gain. And some people actually say it's more detrimental to the environment, this forced energy transition that we're going through, because of all the land requirements of wind and solar, all the mines that are being used to have cobalt for lithium batteries. But it's just ceding more power and more money to the Chinese Communist Party.
Yep. What's the primary motivation, you think, of the Biden administration pushing this?
Well, I really think it's to appease their large leftist donors who are insistent on this. You've got John Kerry going around the world, flying in his private jet, you know, telling people they've got to stop using hydrocarbons when he doesn't. And maybe he does realize that the hydrocarbons that are powering his private jet are, you know, being fueled with fuel from a Chinese refinery refining Iranian oil. Because the Biden administration is completely ignoring sanctions, putting $80 billion into the Iranian government, which just happens to be funding this war in the Middle East. I mean, all these ships that are getting attacked, hauling American goods, American military men and women getting attacked because of this transition and this transition of wealth from America to China and then into Iran. It's absolutely appalling. But I think it's to really appease those leftist loud voices that are just have this cult-like fascination with this climate religion. And it's really unfortunate. That's why electricity costs are on the rise in the United States. And President Obama said this. He used the term necessarily skyrocket.
That's right.
Necessary for electricity costs to go up.
Yeah, that's right. Gosh, that's the calculus of that's fascinating, because I guess there's a school of thought that you got to get your base fired up, especially when the base is so down right now with Biden.
Yeah.
But that's quite a trade-off with the blue-collar union workers of Michigan, right? I mean, there's no way they're happy with this.
No, not at all. Not when you see an increase from 2021 to 2022 of 30% of people getting disconnect notices from their electricity provider because the costs are up so much. Over a third of Americans have to choose every single month between food, medicine, or energy. So they're talking about fuel for your car or electricity. That same year, there was a 76% increase in people getting their natural gas disconnected in their homes. And so when you can't heat your home, when you can't put food in the refrigerator, Americans are getting pretty mad. And that's what the polling shows. I mean, the economy and the border are top issues right there. And there's only two issues where President Biden outpolls President Trump, and it's the environment and education. I think he's wrong on both of those issues. I think President Trump is better on those two particular issues. And I think his record proves that from his time in office, you know, cleaning up more EPA Superfund sites than any president before him. And those are great environmental records. We became number one in access to clean and safe drinking water during the Trump administration. We've reduced pollution nearly 80% over the last five decades. So why? I'm just guessing that the President Biden is doing this just to appease the cult. And hoping that they're going to turn out more votes for him. But he really, it'd be nice if he'd be focusing and embracing American energy and helping the economy, because everything that we're going through with a higher cost is purely related to energy-driven inflation from Bidenomics.
Yeah, that's right. So let's talk about this Texas bill that divests the state from BlackRock. Am I right in that you were a part of this bill when you were in the state house in Texas?
Yes, actually, well, part of the making of it. So right as I was leaving the legislature in 2017, we passed a bill that says if you boycott, divest, or sanction the state of Israel, then you're no longer welcome to do business with the state of Texas. And there's, I think, over 30 states have passed similar legislation to that regards. And then I left the legislature in 2019 and started hearing from energy producers. And they're like, Jason, our bank has cut us off. They've denied us access to credit. And we've had a long-term relationship with this. I start looking into these banks and who their largest shareholders are, and then the alliances that they've formed, and they're essentially forcing this. That, I mean, some of the CEOs of these companies like BlackRock have signed pledges with groups that they're still a part of that are funded by Michael Bloomberg, you know, the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, which no one's heard of. You've got the United Nations.
Say it real quick. What is it called? What's the group?
It's called the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, and it's aligned with some of these UN groups. And what their goals are is to basically coordinate capital and force companies to align with their principles to have a forced energy transition, essentially to end hydrocarbons, to end fossil fuels, to end oil and gas. And the CEOs of these financial institutions like BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street, banks, there's trillions and trillions of dollars of assets under management that are these pension dollars, the firefighters, the police officers, city and county and state municipal employees, they all have their money and they're hoping for these retirements, and they don't recognize that their retirement dollars are being weaponized against responsible American energy producers. So they have gotten together, they've created this cartel and to deny access to capital. And so when I first started hearing about this in 2019, and there's a lot of other people that have been working on this longer than I have, I just happened to write a bill that says if you boycott, divest, or sanction fossil fuels, then you can no longer do business with the state of Texas. And it was targeted at these woke financial institutions that were pushing their ideology on companies rather than fiduciary responsibility. And I thought, well, the last thing we want to be putting billions of dollars of Texas retiree dollars and tax dollars into companies that are going to then weaponize that against the best interest of Texas. We're sitting on a ton of oil and gas in Texas. We need to be producing more of it and exporting it around the world, especially to our allies that really could use some natural gas right now because of what's going on in Russia and Ukraine. And so I wrote this bill. It passed. It became law in 2021, the first state in the nation to do such a thing. In 2022, late 2022 or early 2023, our comptroller, which is our state treasurer in Texas, put BlackRock on the boycott list, the world's largest financial firm, because of their direct involvement in some of these cartel-like groups that are colluding to deny access to capital to responsible American energy producers. So and then now the enforcement is happening, and our permanent school fund, which is over $50 billion. They had $8.5 billion under management from BlackRock. They canceled that contract, and they're withdrawing their funds from BlackRock as we speak. This is the largest divestiture that BlackRock has faced in the country. There's been a bunch of other states, Louisiana, South Carolina, West Virginia. I mean, there's a myriad of other state treasurers who have pulled millions out, but this is really the biggest hit they've experienced And they even came back and, you know, kind of trashed the person within our state bureaucracy that made the final decision on this via social media and a press release a couple of days ago.
That's great. BlackRock has $10 trillion in assets. And if you look at countries' GDP, ours is 26 trillion, China's is 17 trillion, and then Germany, number three, is 4 trillion. So BlackRock's asset management is 2.5 times the GDP of the third largest country, Germany. That's unbelievable power that BlackRock has.
And yeah, I'm glad you noticed that. And then you get together with some of the other companies that are part of some of these alliances, and it's over $70 trillion in assets under management that are all aligned, forcing people down the same path to higher cost energy.
Yeah, so let me, this Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero. You're right, never heard of it. So I just went to the website. So here's the main, this is like the front, I'm reading the first words on the website. Accelerating the transition to a net zero global economy. I want to ask you what net zero means in a minute. The Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero is a global coalition of leading financial institutions committed to accelerating the decarbonization of the economy, achieving the objective of the Paris Agreement to limit global temperature increases to 1.5 Celsius from pre-industrial levels requires a whole economy transition. Companies, banks, insurers, and investors will need to adjust their business models, develop credible plans for the transition to a low-carbon, climate-resilient future, and then implement those plans. So they're making they're not hiding that at all.
No, it's right out there. I can't believe it. I mean, it's on the front page. And it's absolutely absurd. You know, it's funny. I testified in Congress a couple times last year, and I tell people my testimony, and I introduce myself. Hi, I'm Jason Isaac, and I live a high-carbon lifestyle. and I think the rest of the world should, too. And, yeah, you can see the left's heads explode when I say that, because I do. I embrace a high-carbon lifestyle. And you look at places that have high per capita CO2 emissions, they have the best environments, they have the best economies, they have the most freedom. And shouldn't the rest of the world get to experience that? And I'll take a drink of a sparkling water, and I'm like, I just ingested higher concentrations of CO2 than what's in the atmosphere, and I'm not going to spontaneously combust. You know, but that's what they've just, this cult-like fascination with CO2, this decarbonization effort. You know, CO2 it's really a trace gas in the atmosphere. It's 0.04% of our atmosphere and necessary for life on Earth. And the Paris Agreement, when it was signed in Paris, which has not been ratified by the United States. It is not the law of the land in the U.S. I think it's treasonous that you've got companies that are forcing American companies by buying stock in their companies with other people's money and then forcing their executives to bend the knee to ESG, the E in ESG, this decarbonization. I think it's treasonous that they're doing this, but they've got the power of other people's money that's being manipulated against markets. But this whole net zero, and I've done the research. I looked at the models that the UN uses. Their Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change uses a model. It's called the Model for the Assessed Greenhouse Gas-Induced Climate Change. And if we get to net zero, which basically means our CO2 emissions level out, and we are either capturing more, which is stupid, than what we're emitting, which, again, it's just the cost is $50 trillion to do this, which is a little bit more than our debt, if I'm not mistaken, here in the United States. But give it a couple of days, maybe we'll get over $50 trillion in debt. I digress. But if we capture that and we get to net zero by 2050, the temperature differential by 2100 is less than 0.1 degree difference. And you do it globally, it's less than 0.2 degree. So even if the globe, because China's not slowing down, they're building 2 coal-fired power plants a week. I wish they would use our pollution control technology. You know, of all the technology they steal from us, it'd be nice if they would utilize that. Their air quality would actually be better in Asia. And some of their pollution impacts the U.S. air quality. It's nothing serious. We are world leaders in clean air. We're practically at a natural state here in the United States. But they're just focused on the CO2 because they recognize that that's really the only thing that's being emitted when you burn natural gas and when you burn coal for electric generation, because we capture everything that's harmful. And so when Paris was signed, global temperatures had already gone up 1.2 degrees, and they're trying to stave off 1.5, and their efforts aren't doing anything. More and more research is coming out that shows that emissions. I mean, there was this Norwegian study that showed man's contributions of greenhouse gas emissions in the atmosphere have had no impact on global temperatures. It's actually the other way around. It's the warming is increasing CO2 temperatures or CO2 emissions naturally. Yeah. It's not the other way around.
Yep. Yep. They got the hockey stick. Al Gore got the hockey stick backwards. amazing. Jason Isaac, CEO, founder of the American Energy Institute, former Texas state rep, wrote that BlackRock divestment bill or was a part of that process. And we appreciate that. Jason, thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me on, Mike. Appreciate
it. Great day. Keep it up. Some report just came out from the WHO, World Health Organization, that of the 100 cities with the worst air pollution, all of them are in Asia. Every single one in Asia. I'm American made. I got American parts. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we're going to talk to the congressman who proposed a bill that would ban DEI in med school. You would think that this diversity woke nonsense would not make it into med school, right? Like meritocracy will remain in sports, and you would think the important things, medicine, life or death, that would be one of them. Alas, it has not. We'll talk with him tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Mike Slater, Breitbart News Daily. Spread the word.